So our next speaker is Becca Wilson from University of Bristol, and she's going to talk about data shield, so medical data sharing.
Can I grab that? Okay, thanks. Hello? Is my microphone on? Okay. I wasn't expecting to be in such a massive room with a giant screen behind me, so I'm probably not going to be able to point too much at the screen. I risk potentially falling off the stage. I'm not the most coordinated in this thing. I've already run over one person's foot since being here. I'm a researcher in the Data to Knowledge group at the University of Bristol. And our research group, we basically focus on writing tools and also exploring the social and governance issues around medical data sharing, medical data linkage, and medical data access. And so today I'm going to present one of our infrastructures, which uses R as the analytic package, and this is called Data Shield. So we have loads of collaborators that work with us on this project, our primary one being the Abiba software group, which is based at McGill. And Abiba basically have written a whole bunch of open source software solutions tailored towards biobanking. And also I'd like to thank the, that I'm only here today because of the Software Sustainability Institute fellowship, and also being awarded a diversity scholarship to come here. Right, so the biomedical data sharing challenge. So basically, researchers in our discipline pretty much want to pull data from multiple sources that can be located in different countries, for instance, and they want to co-analyze all of this, but they need to do it without disclosing sensitive information or disclosing the identity of the participants in those studies. So in an ideal world of open data and open data access, all this data would be sitting in one big data file that the researchers can just do their analysis on. However, in the real world, this is not what happens, and this is because of a range of barriers, basically, to medical data sharing. And so I've listed some of these here, and these are common to other disciplines as well. The primary reason is because of the ethical and legal and governance restrictions around sharing patient data or participant data. Each country has its own data privacy laws, and each study will have its own governance mechanism to basically enable the data access. The second barrier is that a lot of studies, if you've particularly in developing countries, if you've invested your time and your funding on creating a data set, you don't want to just give the whole raw data set out for free to other groups that perhaps have more resource than you to take the knowledge away from it. And the third reason is that the size of the data is getting bigger, and whilst we have known some groups have perhaps sent a person from one country to another country with a hard physical hard drive with the data on it, you know, we're in the 21st century, we can do this in better ways. So basically this data sharing in medical sciences requires an ethical, legal, social and technical solution. It's an integrated solution, which maybe a few years ago maybe would have been seen as a bit of a moon on a stick situation. But over the past couple of years, this is what we've been working towards. And whilst I can't fit it into this talk, within our wider data shield collaboration, we have explored the socio-ethical and legal issues surrounding data sharing in medical disciplines, and specifically within the data shield context. And so if you're interested in that, there's some publications on our website. So basically, under Data Shield, it's a distributed system, so the data stays at the data providers and it never leaves them. And this basically overall simplifies the governance mechanism and quickens the researchers' access to that data. Because the researchers themselves, when they're doing their analysis, they never see the individual level data, and they only ever receive non-disclosive summary statistics themselves. And so using this combination of things, it means that we're adhering to these data privacy and confidentiality restrictions. So basically, within Data Shield, a researcher can analyze multiple studies together in a co-analysis, or they can also get analysis of individual studies themselves. All the infrastructure is based on open source solutions, and so this is a really cost-effective way to do this. It does require data harmonization if you're going to be doing co-analysis, and that can be lengthy. And finally, in this particular solution, there are alternatives to this to solve this data sharing challenge. But within this system, the researcher themselves can do the analysis, and that's not true for all of the solutions to this problem. So this is our infrastructure, or this is an example of our infrastructure in a co-analysis setting. So top left there, that's the paper that outlines all of this in the International Journal of Epidemiology. So basically what you've got at the bottom under researcher is, I'm not going to try and turn around and point in researcher. This is, the researcher basically logs onto a client portal through a web browser, and they are faced with the standard RStudio interface. That's sitting on a DataShield client portal, and that's connected to three studies in this case. So in terms of each of these studies, they have the same infrastructure set up behind their own firewall. So each study holds its data in its native format and data warehouse. Once the variables have been harmonized across the consortium, a snapshot of that data is put into Opal, which is a data warehouse built by Abiba, and it's actually got DataShield built into it. And this holds our server administration packages, and the DataShield server side packages, which actually conduct the analysis on the individual level data. There's also an R parser that's built in, and this prevents, this actually stops all R functionality in standard R, in all the normal R packages, and it only allows through the DataShield R functionality and any of the pre-approved and audited by our team R functions that we're allowing in this system. Each of these studies only communicates with the DataShield client portal. This is really important because they don't want to be open to the whole of the outside world to have access to their data. And the communications are sent by standard REST protocols over HTTPS. So on the client portal, there's, as I mentioned, there's RStudio server that's running, which is the interface for the user. The DataShield client-side R packages are installed there. So it looks exactly like RStudio. So this is, I took some screenshots yesterday of the live data service that we have running in a European consortium. So basically some of the features are that when you log in, you can, in this instance, let me see if I can point. There's 10 studies that I can connect to, although Sod's Law, when I went to go and take the screenshot yesterday, there's one server that's down. Incidentally, it's actually my server. I need to restart that. So you can see straight away whether or not any of the servers are down before you do analysis. You can also see which servers or which studies actually have which packages for functionality. And you can see that we're testing some of our packages with some studies, and other studies have not agreed to take part in that testing. At the individual function level, each study can actually restrict which functions can be made available to their users. And this is basically to deal with the fact that each study has its own governance mechanism and things that needs to adhere to, that is individual to the study. So you can see that some of the studies have chosen not to implement this particular function. As a researcher, how would I use this? So I would go to my data dictionary for my study. Incidentally, for this particular study, this has been compiled in this web interface. So this particular study has 99 variables across these 10 biobanks. And you could, if you want to, load all 99 at once from all studies within the system, but more often than not, you're not actually interested in all the variables. So I've selected just three. I think it was cholesterol, gender, and BMI that I loaded into the system. So again, it's warned me that when I logged in, that there's one server that I haven't been able to connect to, but it's been able to connect to all other 9 servers, and these are located all across Europe. So the functions themselves work in client-server pairs, and I've seen some other examples of that throughout the conference as well. So all the analysis is done on the individual level data server side, And then there's just a client wrapper function that's really simple that the user runs. So there's loads of anti-disclosure mechanisms that are built into the infrastructure and also at the package level as well. So I mentioned the R parcel already. Another anti-disclosure mechanism is that we actually set a disclosure level. So each study can set this themselves. And this is the minimum cell count required to return a result from an analysis. So this is the minimum number of participants required in order to perform an analysis. And we suggest that this is set to 5, because anything smaller could be potentially disclosive. Then within the functions themselves, we have a team of methodologists that devise new ways of doing different statistical analyses within our infrastructure. And so they also build in preventative measures for to prevent statistical disclosure as well. So the critical point is that individual level data is never seen by researchers, and they cannot print this data to the screen either. So we have two types of functionality. One is one-step analysis, and so in this example I'm going to use mean. So it's either the researcher wants the mean of a study for a particular variable, or a pooled mean across all the studies for a particular variable. So the researcher requests the analysis, the client portal requests that each study, for example in this study mean, each study will calculate the mean and send the statistic back to the client portal, because this is a non-disclosive metric, providing that the minimum disclosure level has been adhered to, this can be passed straight onto the researcher. In the case of a pooled mean, basically the client portal requests some non-disclosive metrics back from each study, in this case the sum variable and the number of participants in each study, and then the client portal itself will calculate a weighted mean based on these two non-disclosive metrics and send that result back to the researcher. So this is an example of that. I pulled this off yesterday from 8 studies, so it shows the top one, that's the pooled mean across the, I think, 8 studies, and then underneath it shows you the mean for cholesterol for each of the individual studies. A second type of analysis is iterative analysis, so this is where things get a bit more interesting. So an example for this is generalized linear modeling within our system. So if I'm a researcher and I want to know, I want to fit a model across all 6 studies, what I do is I type out my model in the same way that you do in a standard GLM function, similar to standard GLM fit in R. And what the client machine does is it fits the model, it requests each study fits the model where the coefficients are 0. Each study sends its score vector and information matrix back to the client portal. The client portal will then sum and then multiply these two matrices together, and incidentally this gives you the value for your next round of coefficients. Those get sent back out again to the studies, and they calculate they fit the model again. And this carries on until convergence. And so basically your final coefficients are sent back to the researcher. So this is what this looks like. It looks really similar to how you'd request a standard GLM basically in R. And then a whole host of information. I've actually cropped it, so I've cut it so that less information actually being shown. So other than the fitting of the model, you can get information back, for example, about how many iterations it took as well. So the status of DataShield at the moment. Our release notes are on our website, datashield.ac.uk. And we have about 150 or so client functions. So these are functions that the researchers themselves can use. And these include descriptive and exploratory statistics, including some graphical functionality as well. I've got some examples here of our contour plots and histograms, and we're working on box plots and scatter plots as well, in a non-disclosive, using non-disclosive outputs. And we also have a couple of modeling functions as well. So other than building our core analysis packages, we're also exploring loads of different data types as well that are complementary to the biomedical and epidemiological data that we use within this current system. So these are the main areas of our efforts. So we've scoped and prototyped system using a data shield approach with genomics data, and we can do a study level meta-analysis equivalent within data shield, and we're currently developing a method for GWAS as well. We've scoped analysis of text data with the British Library. They had an issue where they had some digitized text collections that are licensed to only be analyzed, only percentages of these books can be analyzed within the British Library itself. And so we're looking at a data shield approach to resolve that. And moving on from that, we're now working with the National Centre for Text Mining at Manchester to apply this sort of data shield methodology to text for social science data, qualitative data, patient records and veterinary records and so on. So third area is geospatial data, and the this is important because these environmental data sets about pollution or land contamination are complementary to the biomedical data that we're actually analysing. And also there's a big use now in wearable sensors within these sorts of with the participants in these studies. And finally, the other thing that we've been doing is working with implementing data shield outside of academia. So in this specific instance, it's with F1000 Research, which is a journal, and they're interested in a model where data shield potentially could be used to allow access to sensitive biomedical data from publications that they actually hold. Because this is one of the barriers to publishing with that journal. So who's using DataShield? So you can actually go to this link at the bottom of the slide if you want to find out. There's basically, it's been piloted for the past 4 years within two big EU-funded projects, and they're still using DataShield. The first papers are coming out this year, basically, about their analysis results. It's also being set up in another EU study and on nutrition, and also a global study on diabetes as well. And so basically this is my final slide to outline what our current focus is, or near future focus. Basically, we want to increase the accessibility of Data Shield. Currently, demand outstrips our very small team's ability to supply. We've had lots of interest from other disciplines, and there's requests to incorporate new data types and broaden our analytical functionality. And also, in a trend that is seen in this conference as well, there's lots of requests to have some sort of interactive or GUI interface into this, because not everyone needs to know. Not everyone wants to access DataShield using command line and using R. Those are two things we want to focus on. And then the final thing is that we really want to grow our developer and user community. And we want people to obviously download our demo VMs, which you can do from our website using the try it button. Or you can also, we have some Puppet install as well on GitHub, and to test it and to feedback to us, basically. So I'll be around just for a few hours after this talk if anyone wants to grab me for questions.
First, thank you so much. Very interesting talk. I just want to put out that there is also a big project called the Urban Brain Project. Inside it, there is something called the Subproject 8, Medical Informatics. Mm. And they're working on a very similar architecture of distributed aggregated analysis on hospital data.
Okay.
So I understand there are a lot of issues in such a project.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask just about two.
Mm-hmm.
One is about what type of inference are you able to do with this type of data? And the second question is in terms of ontologies. So combining variables from many different studies is a huge headache.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to know, and that's the more important question to me, but they relate. How are you trying to deal with that, and how are you dealing with it?
So I have to point out that I'm actually a planetary scientist originally, so I can't answer your first question. But if you want, I can put you in touch with our statisticians and they can help you with that. The second question, we have done some work integrating or looking at ways in which we can harmonize across different ontologies. And we were looking at integrating with other softwares like ITB2, for example, which is used in a clinical setting quite often. Or Transmart as well. So yes, we have done some work on that. So we haven't yet implemented Data Shield within a clinical setting, but we do have lots of people that are asking to be a use case for us. But it's something we're going to have to deal with.
Another question?
Interesting work. One question. So are the clients respond? How is the data flowing from the clients to the master? Is it some kind of what is the serialization format they're using for that? Or in other words, is it something like JSON or is it for the REST API?
Where's Ollie? I don't know whether you want to say something.
Backend data warehouse as it's a Java application. So everything's getting serialized and pushed backwards and forwards via REST.
It's very, very small amounts of data. The thing that limits, so we've heard some talks about, for example, hardware or memory and things being the limit to how fast you can do things, for example, utilizing R. The limiting factor in our system is, I guess, it's the time it takes for those communications and also potentially the lowest specification of hardware you have in your whole distributed system. Yeah.
Well, the reason is because I did something similar. There's a package called distcomp on CRAM, which does for survival and similar value decomposition. But I think that I was worried a little bit about the accuracy of the results, and that's why I was wondering what the serialization format was. And we are trying to change it to something binary. So.
Okay.
Maybe one last question. Okay, so we are going to thank Becca again.